Before we start this episode, I would like to take a minute to tell you about the upcoming Texas Woodworking Festival, where makers and enthusiasts come together to celebrate their love for the craft. Join us for this two-day event filled with fun, creativity, and inspiration. The festival brings together lumberyards, woodworking organizations and clubs, content creators, furniture makers, and tool manufacturers for a weekend of food, drinks, and all things woodworking. This year, the festival is launching educational seminars where you'll have the opportunity to learn from some true masters of the craft, including Frank Straza, Philip Morley, Kim McIntyre, and Andrew Hunter, just to name a few. The festival will be held in Austin, Texas on August 26th and 27th. Visit TexasWoodworkingFestival.com for more information and to buy tickets. Whether you're a seasoned woodworker or just starting out, there's something for everyone at the Texas Woodworking Festival. Hi, I'm Kyle, and on episode 457 of the MWA podcast, Rex Hansen is going to share with us the five tips, tricks, or techniques he has learned during the cabinet making and furniture making program at North Bennett Street School. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Sean, Mark, and Brian. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out Rex's interview on episode 456. So welcome back to the show, Rex.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And before we get started with all your tips and tricks, I think this is the last of your five tips and tricks. So listeners, pay attention. But before
is this,
we get
tip 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20.
There it is.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Probably is.
Yeah. So before we get started with that, who's our Patreon shout out for this week?
Well, we want to extend a big thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. But today we're singling out Kevin McMahon. Thank you, Kevin, for supporting the podcast with your contributions on Patreon. If you would like to support the MWA podcast like Kevin does, go to www.patreon.com/MWA podcast. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks so much, Kevin. So what's our first tip, trick, or technique that we have out there?
Okay, since I've given you a few, what I did is I grabbed the ones that were most important to me that I thought I could share for this last semester at North Bennett Street School. So number one is this. If you are going to do a show, a furniture show or a furniture competition where they judge you, put your furniture on a white plinth block. Your furniture presents much better. And if someone's not going to provide one, make your own. It can just be as big as four 2x4s put together, make it look nice, and then just sheetrock the outside of it and plaster it and paint it or something. But just make it look nice. But a plinth block really shows off your piece. And I had a piece that for the first night and part of Saturday, I think it was Friday night and part of Saturday at the Rhode Island show, my piece was tall, and so they didn't put it on a plinth block. And so I mentioned to one of the it was my plant stand that I had in the first exhibition at North Bennett Street School. And I had this, you can see it, it's posted, it's way back in my Instagram postings, but it's a 30 inch tall, 18 inch diameter tabletop. It's figured ambrosia maple with walnut pyramid pins holding the mortise and tenons together. And I think a plinth block showed up about noon on Saturday, and I think I had offers to buy it at about 1 o'clock right after the plinth block.
Oh, wow.
My personal feeling is furniture shows much better on a plinth.
Does the block need to be like custom made for that piece? Like, does it need to be the same proportions? Does it need to be round if the top is round?
No, in fact, I didn't make it. What happened was someone pulled their piece from the show because they didn't like their finish that they had on it. So we just put that plinth block underneath mine. And since mine was so tall, it worked out. I think this plinth block was maybe 4 inches tall, and it was big enough just that it went outside. You know, the table could sit on it. It didn't look like it was too small. But I think North Bennett has a whole bunch of plinth blocks that they made. They just didn't bring one for my piece because it was 30 inches tall, and I thought it was too tall. It didn't need a plinth block, but it looks, just put a small one underneath there.
Yeah.
Cool. Just a short one.
No, that makes total sense because I've been to a number of furniture shows, most particularly as the Texas show that they have here every, I guess it's in the late fall, but the but all of them have plinth locks under all of their furniture. So, and even in museums, they have plinth locks mm-hmm. under them. So, yeah, it makes total sense.
You know, it also, like, if you had a chair, having it up off the ground keeps people makes it awkward to sit in the chair.
I agree.
So people would have to be invited to sit in the chair in order to sit in it, which is kind of what you want.
Yeah.
You know, if you're selling chairs.
One of the things that at this Texas Woodworking Festival, the Texas Furniture Maker Show that I go to every year, is that, they do have chairs on these plinth blocks, but they say they have a little banner at the bottom. If you want to sit in the chair, please ask us. And they take it off the plinth block, and then you can mm-hmm. actually mm-hmm. sit in the chair and stuff. Yeah.
Cool. Good tip.
So it's cool. So what's tip number two?
I found out this last semester, believe it or not, I was looking around, and most of us that had been there for almost 2 years were a little on the burned out side. So you show up at 7 o'clock in the morning and you work till 5, and some people would stay a little later. I found out if I stayed beyond 6, I was pretty burned out the next day, so it didn't matter anymore. I just didn't have the juices to work all day till 9 and then go back at 7 and work that day as well. So these projects, you know, sometimes they're pretty long, especially if there's some, like, the carvings I had, they took me about a month just to do the carvings because I was learning how to do the carvings. I was a little on the slow side. So it's pretty easy to get a little burned out. So what I found out is when working on a big project, it helps to do an interim small project, such as a Michael Cullen box. And so the reason I picked or carve a spoon, that's the ones I used to do. But now that I've learned how to build the Michael Cullen boxes, they're so colorful and whimsical, it's just fun to make those boxes. And so, and that's how he developed them, was he needed something in between big projects to do. So when you have a project and you're feeling a little burned out, do something, you know, make something that you can do. If you're a lathe turner, go turn something on the lathe, because you can knock something out. You can knock out a brand new mallet for yourself within, you know, a couple hours. So do something that you can do and rejuvenate you and keep the juices up. So there's tip number
great
two.
Idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. But the lathe is a deadly instrument. You get involved with the lathe. You
know. The lathe is kind of like spoon carving. It's very addictive for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because, like you said, like you can go to it and knock out something fairly quickly. You can do a small thing that's not the 8, 10, 12, 20 hours of work to do a thing. You can do the thing in a setting. You can make a spoon, you can turn a spindle, you can make a handle for something in fairly short time, really short time compared to other things. So it's tempting.
You can make a hollow form or a bowl really easy.
But like, and Brian mentioned on our last episode, like in a funk in a shop, like getting that little, like just a little bit of work done, a little bit of inspiration by doing something and having a product that you can look back and see that you've done. Yeah. Can spark the next step, you know, can spark your next idea or something to that, can push you forward. That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
So what's your third tip?
Number three is find yourself a trusted colleague or mentor to collaborate with and bounce ideas off of. It's highly rewarding, plus gives you new ideas and a new perspective. We do that all the time at North Bennett. We talk to each other. We ask each other about our projects. I can honestly say, and I probably may get in trouble from instructors for saying this, but I learn as much from my peers as I do from the instructors, and that my instructors will teach, you know, someone working on a Pemberton gaming table or Chippendale chairs. The instructors are talking to them, and then I talk to my colleague student. I learn how they do some of those things too. And so it's pretty beneficial.
I don't think your instructors would be upset about that at all. I think that's part of the process of learning, right? You see it, you do it, you teach it, right?
And I think so.
You're hearing it through their filter, through their experience. And, you know, they may have an insight that the instructor doesn't have. So that's a great idea.
Yeah. Anytime you have a trusted expert, I think it's an awesome idea to push them past them and go, what do you think about this? As long as they're not terribly crass, you know, or just like a butthead that are going to like talk to you in a way that you're not receptive to. I won't even say that the way they talk is that, I mean, you have to know who you're talking to, know who you're asking for, but And I have that in my office. You know, there are people that are like, oh, this guy's a jerk. I'm like, really? No, he's not. He says it the way you perceive it. And if you forget about how you perceive it, it's actually not that bad. He's asking a question. His tone is not the greatest, but he's asking a question. Like, so knowing that and asking that, that's a fantastic way. I mean, that's a life lesson. Mm-hmm. Ask questions of the people that know. Hey, what do you think? Hey, is this right? Something like that. And it's a great way of not only learning, but progressing.
Yeah. So, I mean, even what I do with the jigs and stuff is I have a few chair makers that I call up and I talk to them about it and, you know, do those kind of due diligence type things. And, you know, they test stuff for me. And, you know, it's like one of those things. And even when I'm not coming up with new ideas or something like that, I always tend to check in with them. And sometimes our conversations actually expand to new ideas. So who knows? Yeah.
Agreed.
And that's part of how you not only keep the craft alive, but also keep the craft moving forward. Mm-hmm. You know, if because woodworking can be very isolating. You know, a lot of the people are in their basement by themselves, and it pays to have somebody you can bounce ideas off of. You know, I've learned that I was doing some things horribly and inefficiently after talking to other people. So it can save you a lot of headache and save you material. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So what's your fourth tip?
Number four. Okay, so for the last couple of years, I've asked my instructors to give me a list of books that they like or, recommendations for books that I should have in my arsenal when I leave North Bennett Street School. So on Thursdays, when we have Lance lectures, he always gives the references that he's pulled material from on his furniture when we're talking about either a specific period of furniture or specific types of furniture. He always provides his reference, and sometimes he has the actual books there and we can thumb through them and look through them and we can order them, okay? But the three that they said that if they had textbooks that they wanted us to buy, it would be these three. So these are the three. The Encyclopedia of Furniture Making by Ernest Joist, edited by Alan Peters. It's published by the Sterling Publishing Company in 1987. The other two you can buy as a set. You have to be careful. There's a third one, and the third one I've heard by many renowned woodworkers that they've never had it on their list of ones to buy, but number one and number two by Tay Fried. So it's spelled TageFrid. Tay Fried teaches woodworking, book number one on joinery, and book number two on shaping, veneering, and finishing. They're both by Taunton Press, published January 1st, 1996. So those three books, I've actually read a lot of the Encyclopedia of Furniture Making. I have both book one and book two of Tay Fried's, and I've read those a little bit. So the Encyclopedia of Furniture Making kind of tells you what it is. Tay Fried kind of teaches you how to make it or do it.
Yeah. I would recommend his third book.
Okay. Cause I have the third book as well, and I just haven't opened it much. What I do know is
that's impressive. Kyle had it like right next to him.
as I hold it up. Well, I have my woodworking bookcase right next to me. So I saw this. I went, okay, let's do book three. The only reason book three is it has chair stuff in it.
Okay. So, and you would probably know, but maybe as much as 20 years ago, well, 20 years ago for sure, but maybe as much as 10 years ago, those three books were highly expensive, but through Thriftway Books and a Libra now, I think you can buy, I think they're well reasonable. I think I got Tay Fried book one, two, and three for like $25. Now, if you bought them brand new, they were like $100 or $70 or something like that. Then they
I think I paid about $25 for mine, and it was it was a used book, but it was
in good condition, right?
In good condition, yeah.
You can get those books really reasonable, and most likely, if you don't want to buy it, go check them out of your library. They're there. They're probably there.
Yeah, or they can get them for you.
Alone.
All right. So, Rex, what's your fifth one? What do you got?
This is my last one, so I'm just going to share this with you. The biggest skill North Bennett Street School teaches in their cabinetry and furnishing department is woodworking problem solving. So my tip to you is create and use your resources, whether they're course notes, videos, photos, books. In my case, my biggest tool is probably the Rolodex of my associated classmates, because I can call them and ask them questions. I know classmates now that one got a commission, one more than he could handle during the summer, so he passed it on to another classmate to do. So build your resources is my tip.
Excellent.
Powerful.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah. Yeah, I think all of us that have been into this that have some resources as far as, you know, meeting people and stuff like that. Stay in contact with those people. Give them a call, you know.
One I didn't list that you could say is, like, in Idaho, there's no furniture guilds or woodworking guilds, but there are woodworking clubs, which is very similar. And I know some of those guys, they've forgotten more than I've learned. They really know their stuff. And some of them, there's a tool collectors club. You know, if you want to know what this thing in my hand is, you know, say I got a Stanley 110 or something, those guys can probably tell you the year it was made, what model number, you know, what the details are on it and how it differed from year to year. Those guys know their stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that almost goes back in a different way, but on your last tip, on number four there, like, you know, lean on your experts. You know, if that's your thing, if you like vintage tools, there are people that absolutely have studied those things and know that marking by, you know, but like the back of their hand, like that is crucial if that's what you're looking for. So those experts are always, you know, beneficial for sure.
9 times out of 10 in the woodworking community, they're probably they're gugging to share information.
Absolutely.
We do mm-hmm. love to share.
Absolutely. Look at the tangents we go on this show. we want nothing but to, I mean, it's not like we don't think about it. It's not premeditated, but boy, you get an idea that somebody's passionate about or has a thought about. Yep, we'll share.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And speaking of sharing, so Rex, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
They can find me on Instagram at REXHANSEN.
Mark, what about yourself?
That was, I just want to say, truly masterful segue there, Kyle. Well done.
It was.
I mean, that was the best one I've heard since I've been involved with the show. So now that I've ruined that,
you can find me. No, you didn't ruin it. You know, that's part of the mastery of it is pointing it out. So, you know, there you go.
Recognition.
joineffort.net/MWA. Subscribe to the newsletter. Get a free woodworking video every week and some tips and tricks and all that good stuff. How about you, Brian?
Instagram is where you can find me at Obst Woodworks, and Obst is OBST. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
Per usual, you can find me at SeanW78.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.